Okay, now we introduce some of the practical tricks which are used in simulations of fluid systems that will be useful for the homework. We first discuss the problem of the truncation of the potential. Okay, let's consider a system, a typical fluid system, in which particles interact with some kind of pair potential. The main property of this pair potential is that they usually have a long tail. For instance, they may interact with a Lennard-Jones potential, which decreases 1 over R6. And so this means that there is a potential energy, in principle, between pairs of particles at any distance. And this, of course, requires a lot of computer time when we do the Metropolis update, because in the Metropolis update, we have to compute the difference in potential energy. Considering the old position of particle I and the new position of particle I, when we update, of course, particle I. And to compute that, we have to compute this, the sum over J, over all particles J, different from I. And this means that in the update, the computer time increases with the number of particles. If we double the number of particles, the particles double, and so the sum over J takes twice the computer time to be obtained. So this is quite heavy in numerical simulations, which there are many particles. And we want to introduce a trick which allows you to reduce the computational work for the update of one particle from n to 1, to a constant, which does not increase with the number of particles. And the way out is that of introducing a truncated and shifted potential. So we rewrite the potential as the sum of two terms. One is called the shifted truncated potential, VSH, which is obtained, as you can see in the picture at the end of page 1. This potential is zero for R larger than RC. RC is called the cutoff. And it's the same as V of R apart from a shift. The shift is needed because we want a continuous potential, if possible, because otherwise we have problems in computing pressures and also in the update, because of course if there is a non-continuity, then when the particle is moved from one side to the other of the barrier, there are problems with the acceptances. So we want a potential which is continuous, and to do that we also shift the potential. Then we have an external potential, which is always small if RC is sufficiently large, because it's equal to the value of V at the cutoff point, and then it contains the tail for R larger than RC. If we introduce these two potentials, the total potential energy can be written as the sum of USH, which is the sum of the interactions due to the shifted and truncated potential, and UX external, which is instead the sum of the interactions due to VX. And then we can rewrite the average value of A. A is a generic observable which depends on R1, Rn, in an expression in which the mean values are only with respect to the truncated and shifted potential energy. This is done as written at page 2. So we rewrite the integral of A times e to minus beta u as an integral with respect to e to minus beta u sh multiplied, so we separate the potential energy, so there is e to minus beta u sh multiplied by A multiplied by e to minus beta u x. And the same we do for the partition function, which is again written as the product, as an integral of the product of the e to minus beta USH times e to minus beta U external. This is a separation that we will use often in the next lectures when we'll discuss reweighting methods. So we introduce a new partition function in which we only consider e to minus beta ush and a new average value with respect to e to minus beta ush. And so it's easy to realize from the expressions that we have obtained for the two integrals that the original average value can be rewritten as two average values with respect to the new partition function in which we only consider the shifted and truncated potential energy. So we obtain in the expression which is written in the middle of page 2, and it is an exact expression. And here there is an advantage because in the update we only need to consider the shifted and truncated potential, and if we use RC not too large, we can use improved methods to reduce the computational work significantly. Why is that? Because if we use the truncated and shifted potential, in the summation over J that was written in page 1, we can limit ourselves to consider only those particles whose distance from particle I is less than RC. So we don't need to sum over all particles, but only over those particles which are sufficiently close to particle I. And in this case, there are improved numerical methods to compute these sums that do not scale with the number of particles themselves. So they are of order 1. So you just need a computer time of order 1, which does not include the number of particles, to compute the sum over particles J that are sufficiently close to particle 1. So this is a significant improvement in the update. But still, there is a problem in the computation of the observable, in the computation of A, e to minus beta ux, and of e to minus beta ux that appear in the numerator and denominator, because in this case we have to perform sums over all pairs of particles, and so the observable scales as n squared. The computer time to compute the observable scales like n squared, the square of the number of particles, simply because we have to consider all pairs, and the number of pairs is n times n minus 1 divided by 2, so it scales like n squared. And if we keep this exact expression, it may happen that if n is large enough, the measurement of the observable takes more time, significantly more time, than the update. So we perform now some approximations that will require, however, RC to be large, and we'll discuss what large means in the next slide. So what are the approximations? The first approximation, we simply neglect the factors e to minus beta u external in the numerator and the denominator in the mean values, and so we simply approximate the mean value of A as the mean value over the shifted and truncated potential. The second approximation concerns the observable. So imagine that our observable A is a sum of two-body interactions. This is the case, for instance, for the potential energy itself, but it's also the case for the virial, which is needed in the computation of the pressure. So what we do, for the function, for the two-body function small a, we do a separation which is analogous to the one that we discussed for the potential energy before, but now we don't need to perform any shift. So we simply separate small a as the sum of two terms, u cut, which contains the function for r less than rc, and ux, which is instead the part of the function which is for r larger than rc. And of course, a is ucat plus ux, is the sum of the two terms. And this means that our observable capital A is the sum of capital A cat plus capital A external, which means that the average value of A is now the average value of A cat plus the average value of A external. So the idea now is to compute A cat in the Monte Carlo simulation, but this is easy because of the presence of the cutoff. So again, we can simplify the expression so that the computation of A cat no longer scales like n squared, it only scales like n. For each particle I, we need to consider only its neighbors within a sphere of radius Rc. And so for each particle I, we can compute the quantity in a time of order 1. And since we have n particles, the computations of A cat requires a computer time of order n, order number of particles. The next quantity is Ax, which in principle requires a computer time of order n squared, but we don't compute it using Monte Carlo methods. We compute it in a different way, which is written at page 4. So we replace, write a external the average value as the average value of each single term, Ax, and then we use the same technology that we used when we are discussing the pair distribution functions. So we introduce in each average value at page 4 a delta function and an integral over capital R. Of course, this integral is 1 because of the delta function, so we are really doing nothing. But then in the first line at page 4, we do the same trick that we did when discussing the pair distribution function. We replace the argument of Ax with capital R so that it goes out of the mean value, and then we replace the delta function with the pair distribution function, g2 of r, multiplied by 1 over v. Then the sum over the pairs can be done exactly, nothing depends on the pairs of particles, and so we get a factor of n minus 1 divided by 2. Then we use the fact that in the integral, everything depends only on the modulus of R, both Ax and the pair distribution function, so that we can do the angular integral exactly, and we get a factor of 4 pi, which goes out. So 4 pi divided by 2 gives you the factor 2 pi in the last line. And then we use the fact that Ax vanishes for r less than the cutoff, so that we can just write the integral over distances and an integral from the cutoff Rc up to infinity. Up to here, there are no approximations, everything is exact, but of course the problem now is in g2 of r, which we don't know. But now here is our choice, but here is the approximation. Now we choose Rc so that the pair distribution function is essentially 1 for distances larger than Rc. So here there are two examples, one good example and one bad example, one good choice on the right and one bad choice of Rc. So suppose that the g of r makes this oscillations. The choice on the left is bad because we are choosing Rc in a region in which the g of r is still varying, is not yet 1. So this choice is not good. While on the right, we do the good choice because we choose Rc in a region in which the g of r is essentially 1. So here is the condition on the cutoff that makes the approximations that that we've made up to now sensible. The error which is introduced by this approximation is not large. Note that this condition that Rc is in the region in which the g of r is essentially 1 is important both for the Peirce approximation, in which we simply neglected in the update the contributions of the external potential, and also it's also important for the computation of the observable. Once we make this approximation, we obtain for the average value of the external A an integral in which everything is known, because Ax of r is a known function of the distance, so it's just a question of performing the integral. So below there is an example for V of r, for the potential energy. Suppose the potential energy is V divided by Rp, P some number, some parameter larger than 3, and then you just do the integral. This is an analytic calculation, and then we obtain our expression for V, which is the average value of the cutoff V, and this is computed from the Monte Carlo data, from the Monte Carlo simulation. And then we have an additional term, which is an analytic number. Everything is known here, and this quantity is usually called the tail correction. And this tail correction provides the correct result, the correct correction to the average value of Vcat, as long as Rc is chosen in the region in which G of R is essentially 1. There is one important observation here about the potential energy. When we do the update, remember to use the shifted and truncated potential energy. When we compute instead the average value of V, you should compute V cat with no shift. Otherwise, of course, your potential energy will have a tiny error due to the fact that you have shifted the potential energy. So remember to use two different things in the update. In the update, you use the truncated and shifted potential, while in the average value, you use only the truncated potential without any shift.